in the book of Mishlei, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adom. The candle of Hashem is the soul of man. So what are we supposed to get from this analogy? That between the Ner Tamid, the eternal candle, and the Neshama, the soul, that every detail of the Ner Tamid can be matched to the detail of the ideal soul. We know that the Ner Tamid must be fueled by olive oil in order to produce the clearest flame. The Gemara Brachot parallels olive oil and the light of Torah. Torah is the only fuel which fills the soul. Anything else is like diesel in a Porsche. I said that to somebody. It's like diesel in a Porsche. And they said, God forbid, God forbid. The other motivations destroy the neshama. Oh, it can run well temporarily, but in the end, you blow the motor. The oil of that nair, of the light, must be pure and contain no sediment. Sediment. What does sediment signal? Stagnation. Stagnation. Stagnation real. Stagnation in the oil. Stagnation in the heart. Stagnation in one's drive. There's no such thing as a soul that can level out on a neutral plane. Every action, every inaction affects the soul's status. Not permitting stagnation. We know that the ramp up to the Holy of Holies, it wasn't a stairway where you could stop and rest. It was a steep ramp because we're learning a lesson. The Kohanim who marched up the ramp. You can't stop on a ramp because if you stop, you're going to fall backwards. And that's the lesson. There's no such concept as a minimum fulfillment of mitzvot, of the commandments. But like a person trying to survive on exactly a poverty line salary, or a student who aims only for a grade of 65. I'm going to hold it there. The soul aiming for the minimum is more times than not going to slip underneath that line. The oil of that Ner Tamid has to be crushed from the olive oil and not be obtained from grinding, which produces the majority of olive juices. Similarly, although we are required to press ourselves to fulfill the commandments, there's no command to destroy ourselves in the process. Every Jew has to fill the Laha'alot Ner, to try again, to light his candle. And if he doesn't succeed on the first time around, I tried. I did it once. It's not enough. That flame has to be rekindled until the fire is strong. More fuel has to be added. That final Ner Tamid specification is that the flame must always be lit every day. Every individual action should be pre-considered based on whether or not Hashem will accept the flame it produces. For all of us, may the merit of the millions of Nerot Tamid permanent flames bring the light of Moshiach. Shabbat Shalom or Mivorach from Jerusalem.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Hello and welcome to Soul Talk with Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel. Rabbi Aaron, last week we had a fascinating conversation about what it does it mean that I have a soul. And ultimately, it comes down to the essence of who I am as a soul. And I highly recommend you listen to that episode if you have not done so yet. And you will definitely, and I have been giving a lot of thought to rethinking myself, who am I, right? Who's the essence of who I am? Who am I really? But that really brought us to another question, which I would like to address this.
Are you enjoying this program? You can listen to the rest of it on our website where all of our shows are archived, and you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel for Israel News Talk Radio. We're now going to a live show where you can call in and join us on the air. Our phone number is on the top of our homepage at israelnewstalkradio.com. And now for this live program.
Good morning, good morning. My name is Andrea Simintov, and you're listening to Pull Up a Chair on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I believe in the 1960s, could it have been the 60s? Yeah, it had to be the 1960s. There was a show on American television. It was the precursor to Saturday Night Live and a lot of these kind of stand-up comedy shows. And the name of the show was Laugh-In. And Laugh-In, because it was the era of great protest, there were sleep-ins and sit-ins. And it was a time of great upheaval in America, and America needed to laugh. And a lot of great comedic personalities emerged from that show. I remember in particular Goldie Hawn, the famous Goldie Hawn actress, was a regular on Laugh-In. Anyway, I was thinking about this today. You know, they say, you know, be careful what you pray for. You just may get it. In the world of laughing, well, there's another saying that says, and there's a famous Jewish proverb. And the proverb goes, if you cannot be grateful for what you have received, then be grateful for what you have been spared. I thought about this today, and we'll get to the laughing connection in just a few minutes. I thought about it today because last Thursday, at this time, we did not have a show last Thursday, and it was unexpected. It was unexpected because unless I'm traveling or unless sick in bed with COVID number 104, it is a pleasure. No. It is an honor, a humbling honor to sit behind this microphone and commune with friends, both Pope Eretz Israel, here in Israel and around the world. But last Thursday morning, I was in Hadassah Hospital, Hadassah Ein Kerem. I had been admitted on Monday night for something that I really thought was not a big deal. I thought, gee, let's get it checked out. It seemed that not the Shabbos prior, which would have been 3 days prior and more normal in this conversation, it had been a week prior, the Shabbos before, I awakened in the morning, the delicious smell of cholent filling the air, and I opened my eyes. And as I was muttering the prayer upon awakening, Moda Ani Lifanecha, thank you for giving me back my soul, I realized that I had been given indeed back my soul, but I had not been given my vision in one of my eyes. Did I go to the hospital? Did I check out any medical sources? No. And even though it was Shabbos and I could not consult with WebMD or Dr. Google, I knew. Oh, I knew it was a cataract. Anybody listening in who is of that age knows, well, that's the time we get those cataracts. And so I ignored it because I knew I would call the eye doctor, and because I really want to have that cataract surgery, because I really want to have that vision reparation, and after LASIK, I thought, this is the time, and I did nothing about it. And I had a little bit of light and a little bit of dark. And if there are any ophthalmologists listening into this show, I know your heads are in your hands and saying, idiot, idiot. And I waited. And I waited. And I also happened, another reason I waited, which of course the doctors in the hospital kept asking, why did you wait 9 days? Everywhere I went, the janitors were asking me, why did you wait 9 days? And my answer sounded so feeble, although it had been brilliant in my mind during the week. Well, I'm in the midst of changing my coupa, my HMO, my healthcare provider, and it only kicks in on the 1st of May. So if I wait, I'll have one set of ophthalmologic surgeons working on my eyes instead of two. Anyway, I finally did go to a doctor in the Geula neighborhood of Jerusalem. If anybody knows Geula, it's a world unto itself. I really stepped back into medieval Europe, going to this doctor where I could get an appointment. I thought maybe I'll get a permission slip. It's called a hafnaya. To go to the ER and let them laugh at me there and say, what, you're coming into the emergency room for a cataract? And I went to this doctor, and everybody in the waiting room was either Haredi or Hasidic, various branches of Judaism. And I, who had quickly put on a skirt over my exercise clothing so I wouldn't stand out that much, stood out like a sore thumb. And everybody was very relaxed and very nice. And they saw that I had an emergency. And there was no receptionist. It was just a list on the wall. And I walked in and met this marvelous Tunisian doctor who looked at my eyes and put drops in. And then when I went back, let's not go through all the details, he took a look and he said, I can't see this. I can't see that. You don't have cataracts. And get to the hospital right now. To which I said, can I go to the hospital next to my house? And he said, no, you have to go to Hadassah Ein Kerem. I said, can I go tomorrow after my clients? He said, no, go right now. I said, okay, I'll take the bus home and my husband will drive me. To which he responded, get to the hospital. Tell your husband to meet you there. And thus began a journey into a world that I did not know existed, and certainly not for me. And more importantly, already the message before the details is, don't take 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day, one relationship for granted, because things change in a heartbeat. And I seem to have been the only one who did not know that I was being treated or being looked at for a stroke. I didn't know until I was admitted, and then I saw I was put in a stroke unit. We'll cut to the chase. I did not have a stroke. I had a very serious a hemorrhage in my eye. I am blind in one eye. The vision is returning slowly. I am undergoing a series of treatments that are too horrific to mention. My bad fortune was, forgive the spiritual pun, it was an eye-opener. The loss of vision was indeed an eye-opener, a soul expander. And like everything in our lives, a gift from heaven. We can count our umglichs, we can count our misfortunes, we can count our woes, or we can count our blessings. and lying in a hospital bed, and I was not sick. You know, you have that shunt in your arm where they put the IVs in. I had no IV. I had nothing going in there, no medicine. They came around with the trolleys at night and giving everybody their little pills. I got nothing. And yet, my prayers changed. And suddenly, I was aware of even the shallowness of my previous tefillot, my previous prayers, where I would ask for material sustenance. I would ask for things that really were not front and center in a universal heavenly sense. And what remained as my prayers scaled down, as I stopped praying for everything that no longer mattered before the diagnosis of no stroke, no brain tumor, no cerebral hemorrhage. My children were very important. They were front and center. My health, people whom I love, were accessible in my limited vision. They were acute. They were high resolution in both my heart and my soul. And all the things that I thought were important, the peripheral things, unlike my lovely peripheral vision, vanished, evaporated, like the clouds evaporate as the sun rises on a summer morning. And what I found fascinating, forgive me for the term gobsmacking, was the role that Israel continued to play b'toch tefillot, inside of my prayers. I even thought, forgive me, a little bit cynically, that maybe even the viability of modern Israel would also dissipate as my soul connected to what is indeed authentic. But it didn't. Israel is real. It was front and center. The accuracy, the holiness, the viability was right up there with everything that I and we hold dear. It was an insight that I could only reach via blindness. And you know what? I also learned, until the day I lost my vision, I thought that going blind is possibly one of the worst things that can happen in one's life. No, it's not. There are many people who live lives with one eye, with no eyes. Do they wish it were different? I assume so. Indeed, I do assume so. But there are things that are worse. And there is so much, so much, so much to be grateful for. It really is a flip. And just one very sweet story I must share with you. On Monday night, as I'm in the ER, and one day, when the war is over, and we find our balance, and we can hug one another, and help each other through the continual lifetime, the lifetimes of mourning ahead that exist for so many holy Israeli families. When we will laugh, I will do a show and tell you how much eating goes on in the emergency room of an Israeli hospital. how much people are eating, is waiting for diagnoses and waiting for diagnostic testing, the kind of eating, the sandwiches, the cake, the coffee, all the volunteers feeding people that may be on the verge of demise, but nobody gives up a tuna sandwich. Anyway, but one of the loveliest things was I didn't want to think bad thoughts. I didn't want to think the crazy. I was in the hospital. That was their job. And when I heard that I was being admitted, I had three thoughts. One was, oh my gosh, pull up a chair on Thursday morning on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I must admit, that was only a fleeting thought. The other thought was, I made a great dinner. What's going to happen to my dinner? Okay. Another thought was my clients. I immediately wrote letters to, I wrote notes to about eight clients and said, due to unforeseen, punny, circumstances. But then the thought was, there's an election tomorrow, election day. How will I vote? Can you imagine? How will I vote? They're sending me in for a radiation pumping, a CAT scan. And I'm thinking, I've got to get to the polls. Maybe they will let me out. A dear friend of mine was running for city council. I had to vote for him. Anyway, I didn't have any clothing. I didn't have a toothbrush. I had nothing with me. They admitted me to the hospital. I slept on a bed in my clothing. I took off that skirt and rolled it up under my head as a pillow. And the next morning, two adorable Haredi girls, ultra-Orthodox girls from an organization called Lev Belev here in Jerusalem, came into my room. And they were whispering because I had a roommate. And they said, good morning. Everything in Hebrew. Would you like to vote? Wow. I said, I sure would. I couldn't see anything. Couldn't find the wheelchair. But I got in the wheelchair. And just to let you know, the holiness of this country in Hadassah Ein Kerem Hospital, behind the information desk, they had erected a makeshift voting center. And all I thought was the holiness of these people, the holiness of these lovely girls, the holiness of everybody that is involved in the endeavors of making us well, and the holiness of blessed Eretz Yisrael. So that is where I was last week. And where are you? Okay. So anyway, we've printed out the notes from the show today in 18-point fonts. And I hope that we will muddle through, and I'm expecting great compassion from the both live and podcast listening audience. So let's first say goodnight. Hello to those listening in from America. Hi. So much going on, so much on your political front, so much that I probably won't talk about. Okay, we have the UK with us this morning. Good morning, England. Australia is with us. Boker Tov, Eretz Yisrael. What can I say? Feel the embrace. The Netherlands has joined us this morning. Jamaica, so excited to see Jamaica with us. Canada's with us today. Brazil, what time is it in Brazil? Nigeria has joined us. India, hi India. And South Africa is in the house. Good morning, South Africa. Please God, I will be with you. Next job is in South Africa. And God willing, in 2 weeks. Oh, also we have, oh my gosh, I have one eye and I can't, Gwangju, Korea, the Republic of Korea. Or maybe it's, no, it's Korea, Republic of Gwangju. Very nice. I don't think you've been with us before. Good morning, South Africa. And God willing, I will actually be speaking in the Sandton Shul in South Africa, in Johannesburg, on Wednesday morning. I think it's, the 20, I think it's the 20th. So if you want to know more about it, drop me a note, Andrea@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and I will let you know what time and where I'll be in the Sandton Shul, hopefully lifting the spirits of my friends in Joburg, and they in turn will lift my spirits. So very, very excited. All right. Keeping up in terms of, we have so many politics, but let's skip that a second. I want to stay with the gratitude thing. I don't usually start you know, an article with things like this. But as we were talking about the surprise and not expecting, came across an article. I don't know where I came across, but there's a woman in Texas. I wonder if you are listening in, Sherry Moody in Deer Park, Texas. She's beautiful, married, a teacher, a high school. Have I said anything wrong yet? Sherry had a fever. Thought it was a flu. Thought it was a cold. And she had trouble breathing. And so she went to the hospital. And she says that she had never been to the ER before in her life. She was very healthy, very in shape. She ate right. She exercised. She did everything right. Okay, everybody? Without going into heinous, gory details, she found herself not just with double pneumonia, and that had been brought on apparently by streptococcus. It's a bacteria that causes a strep throat. So far, nothing crazy, right? We've all heard it. Some of us have had it. But she went into septic shock. And what happened was her limbs began to mummify. And the upshot of the story is that beautiful Sherry Moody, who one morning, the light of her life was just bright and shining, suddenly found herself quadruply amputated in an effort to save her life. She had nothing to fight with. And her husband, her adorable husband, David, you know, he said he just watched. He watched his wife, her limbs begin to die. And I've seen photos, horrific photos. But this is the point, the pull up a chair, Ikar, the center. Both David and Sherry, who were high school sweethearts, as they adjusted to the new realities of their life together, David left his job to take care of his wife full time. They have both chosen happiness, and I can't even believe I'm almost choking on this line, but not letting the hardships define them. And Sherry says, and by the way, she's real. She's real. She's not a Barbie. Okay? She says, I just choose to be happy. It's not to say I don't have a breakdown. It's not to say I don't cry, but I don't let it last. And David remains in awe of his wife's strength. She's just amazing. Both of us talk together about our blessings. We talk about the things that are going right in our days, that are going right in our lives. You know, he didn't say what is going right in our lives and not what is going wrong. What is going wrong is not even in the equation. Can we learn from Sherry Moody, Sherry and David Moody? Of course, it's extreme. It's crazy. It's lo aleinu. It's not us. There, but for the grace of God, go every single one of us. And we must ask ourselves the question, especially in a world of quick fixes, Instagram photos, TikTok dancing and modeling videos. Who are we? Are we our legs? Andrea asks, am I my eyes? Or are we something far, far greater? I think I know where we're all leaning on this one. It's hard. It's tough stuff. It's not a sound bite. Okay? It's not a meme to cut out and put up on our wall. Who are we? We are far greater. No, it's to intuit, to maybe cry, to take our tefillot, and to have role models and find our Torah everywhere, to find our Torah in the words of David and Sherry Moody. Okay. Just bringing this up. I'm going to just bring this up and move on. Just this past week. A beloved Jew on his way home from shul stabbed in Paris. Zurich man, Zurich, Switzerland. He's beaten in the street, beaten to a pulp. Was it anti-Semitism? I'm not sure. He was called a dirty Jew with each blow. And my friends listening in from the UK, tax dollars are going to amp up the security of your Jewish day schools and your synagogues. Had a client this week, and we had our regular talks, and of course we both talk about the blessings of Aliyah, how incredible it was to have come home to Israel, the things that are always difficult. And this woman happens to be financially far more comfortable than I am, and it was interesting. She goes back to visit England 4 times a year. She visits 4 times a year. And she's able to do that. And it was really something just lovely. And that's something that until recently has not been on my schedule to go back to America 4 times. But we both were speaking about the difficulty, the increasing difficulty as we sit with our chutznik mishpacha, our diaspora relatives. It gets more difficult each time as we want to scream, what are you doing? And very often, so often, the responses, as you can well imagine, dear friends, the responses are, I can't afford to live in Israel. We're saving money. We're doing it. It's front and center. It's on our, not our bucket list. Oh, we're doing it. And they save and they put away and they wait. And they wait, and they wait, as a Jew is stabbed in Paris, as a Zurich man is beaten while he's called dirty Jew, as the security is amped up in the UK. As speakers are kicked out of conferences in America that aren't even Jewish conferences. They're kicked out of conferences because it was discovered they were a Jew. And we hear platitudes of, we're saving the money. We're going to get there. Israel's not so easy. It's difficult to live in Israel. We'll visit. We'll try it. How am I going to work? I don't speak Hebrew. I can go down and down and down. And my client and I were discussing this and discussing it. And she, far loftier than me, said, stop. Regardless of their situation, it looks like the day is coming when no amount of money that they saved is going to make their lives better. So they will come to Israel. They will come running. They will come running with the money, and they will come without the money. Our job, those of us who have been blessed to already come here, our job in the family is to embrace them with open arms. She was wonderful. She was absolutely right. So we're here, Mishpacha, the family that's living here, however you come. Yes, indeed, it may be tough for you, but guess what? Your children will soar. And Israel, poor, beleaguered, embattled Israel, was built, designed, created for your children. Just telling you. Yeah, I don't want to talk about the inability for Gazans. Very quick. Gazans are trying to flee. They're trying to flee Gaza. Okay. Don't blame them. And apparently, they're trying to get to Egypt, which is their border. They should be able to walk right in. They're their brothers. They're the ones that are demanding that we better life for them. And they can't get to Egypt. They can't get there. Blocked off. In order for them to get to Egypt, they are bilking. How surprising. Arabs bilking each other for a cost of $6,000 to $7,000 per person. Now, this is, unless you know, this is impossible for the average Gazan family. But you know who's getting through? Those with unlimited funds. Who are they? The nephews and nieces of the leader of Hamas, may his name be blacked out, Yahya Sinwar. His nieces and nephews are going out. The children of his sister, all out. Not only are his children getting out, but many Hamas leaders, not a problem, 6,000, 7,000, 10,000, as the Gazans, because of their own efforts, because of their own, can't find the words, the war that they perpetuated, the war that they brought upon themselves, they can't get out, okay? Because of who they are. So we talk a lot about faith on this show, knowing where to look, knowing from where our redemption will come. And again, the show is very personal. It's personal and it's very self-reflective. I had a sense of shame this morning, not initially, but as I was prepping for the show, I'm quickly running through the news, what's going on in the news. And there was a headline. And a headline said that Donald Trump, who has remained pretty quiet on the issue of the Swords of Iron debacle that was created, instigated, and foisted upon the holy people of Israel by the terrorist organization Hamas. But he was just asked about it, I guess it was yesterday, and I became excited when I saw that he said, let them finish the job. And I said, wow, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear from him. He's got our back. And then I remembered, to whom am I looking for validation? And this is not a comment for or against Donald Trump. I hope I'll be able to remain silent on that subject. The fact is, Israel will reign. Israel will overcome. Israel will soar. I cannot tell you when. I do not have that nevuah, that gift of prophecy. And we will not rely on Hollywood, on politicians, on the repugnant United Nations. They do not get a vote on the viability of Eretz Israel. So it's nice. It's nice to know that there's somebody for 15 minutes has our back until it's not convenient for every organization. Came across another poll, but it's not up to Donald Trump. It's not up to Macron. It's not up to any of them. Yeah? Shouldn't they indeed come down on the right side of history? Not my venue. And yet there was a poll this week. Who actually ordered this poll? I don't even know. But there was a poll. It's a reputable poll. This comes out of Reuters, so it's got to be reputable, that there was a poll that American preference for Israel over the Palestinians remains strong. And I mean, the numbers were certainly very encouraging. And I clapped my hands and I said, ooh-wee. What I did find was that I asked myself the question, does that mean if this is indeed accurate? Oh, yeah, it's a New York Times Siena poll. And it was published on Shabbos, which is why I didn't read it. But it says, does it mean that the propaganda machine isn't working? I must tell you, from my seat in Jerusalem, it's very hard for me to believe in the accuracy. What I did find interesting, without getting into details, I'm throwing out these pages, doesn't matter. Sympathy for the Arabs declined in each older age group, with 16% of the voters over the age of 65 sympathizing with the Palestinian side of the struggle and 54% sympathizing with Israel. I guess that has a lot to do with people getting wiser as they get older. And again, this was not surprising to me, the most supportive region of Israel. The most supportive of Israel was in the Midwest, okay, with 43 choosing Israel over the Arabs. It may be the conservative values. I'm not certain. It may be the church's influence. I'm not certain, but I found it very somewhat comforting and worth keeping our eyes on. Have been reading a lot about people who are choosing to homeschool their children, people who are making clear and decisive decisions not to encourage their high school children to apply to college. And all of us listening in, we all think about the wokeness that has been foisted upon us. Drag queens reading nursery rhymes to kindergarten children. Trans teachers who use their trans sexuality as part of their lessons when they're supposed to be teaching social science or math. Madness. We, they, cis versus whatever you want, the madness. And I came across, as I always say, when there's something I like, I call it the Torah quote. Reverend Vodi Bauchem, who may not know that he taught me Torah this week. He's an African American who he's a minister. I suppose I believe he's a born again Christian, but he moved his church to Zambia in Africa. And what Rabbi Bauchem says, we cannot continue to send our children to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans. If that is not a statement about parental responsibility, I don't know what is. Okay, and one more bleak note. Let's just see. Okay, UNRWA, okay, an arm of the Hamas. Okay, one more bleak note in our opening today before we go on to holy fun stuff. I have one really fun story to share with you. But apparently on Monday, France became the world's. Here it is. Here's your tag of distinction. You know, we never get France listening in. Do we ever have France listening into this show? Maybe this will explain why. France becomes the world's first country to enshrine abortion rights in their constitution. And the article goes on to say that this past Monday, France became the world's first country to enshrine abortion rights in its constitution. And this was the culmination of an effort that began in direct response to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. Imagine. What do they say? Truth can remain stagnant, but evil and lies and filth, that's on a fast track. And let's see, I cut this down just to give you the salient points. If you want to know the exact article, I'll send you the link, Andrea@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. But apparently lawmakers from both houses of the French Parliament voted. Okay, how is this for morality? 780-72 in favor of enshrining abortion rights in their constitution. The amendment gives them a guaranteed freedom to abortion in France. And some groups and lawmakers were not satisfied with this. They weren't satisfied with this. They call for stronger language. They call abortion a right. And here is our Torah crowd. A conference of French bishops on Thursday reiterated the church's opposition to abortion ahead of the vote. Kol hakavod, French bishops, and we need Moshiach now. All right, Zimbabwe, Rhodesia has joined us. Hi, good morning, Zimbabwe. All right, I don't want to talk about UNRWA. Don't like it. Hold on, we're going to move the pages. Whoa. finished. Oh, it's too filthy to discuss. Okay. Good news. On the good news front, let's watch the clock here. Wow. Racing right along with one eye. Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox, you know, if you scan the secular press, man, do they get a bad rap. Burning garbage, protesting, not standing up for the nation, you know, you heard it all. Well, the Haredim, when I was in the hospital, really made my visit so joyous, so pleasurable. Coming in, what can we give you? What can we do for you? I wasn't there over Shabbos. It's my understanding. They walk around, they sing, they bring candles, you know, little electric candles. They light it. They're just lovely. So in the Jerusalem College of Technology, it's called Netzach. Netzach, they have a Netzach medicine program. This is brand new. You are hearing on this show today. This is groundbreaking stuff. It's so exciting. There is now a medical program for Haredim who want to become physicians. Ah, so what's the catch? Is to become physicians while maintaining their Haredi identities, while maintaining their lifestyles, while maintaining their adherence to certain practices that are absolutely part and parcel of the Haredi existence. And so today, I must admit, in the hospital, oh, I forgot to tell you about Israeli apartheid. Without a doubt, I was the complete minority in that hospital as a Jew. The Arab staff, everybody was lovely, everybody was very sweet. Medical, doctors, nurses, clinicians, and patients. My roommate and I, she did not speak any English. She did not speak Hebrew. And we had some conversations and we used Google Translate. Very, very interesting. One of my prayers was to leave the hospital and leave my roommate before Ramadan. Anyway, that was a joke. So this article does go on to say, and I can attest to it from personal experience, there are very few Haredi doctors, only dozens of Haredi doctors working in hospitals in Israel today, but apparently there is not such a quiet revolution happening. This is really great stuff. In May, 20 Haredim, men and women, are going to undergo, what is that? May, March, April, May, another 2 months. They're going to undergo examinations for admissions to 4 medical school facilities, Ariel University, Ben-Gurion in the Negev, Tel Aviv, and Bar-Ilan. It's going to be the first group that are going to take as a group that are going to take the exams, and they're being trained for these exams at that Netzach school. And the article goes on, we have so much to cover, but interviews with such incredible Haredi people, including Dr. Sarah Gnut, and she heads the program of more than 60 applicants. She herself is Haredi. She broke all of the occupational glass ceilings. I just must share her with you. She's the founder and coordinator of the Department of Bioinformatics at JCT's Tal College for Women. Okay? One or two of every alumni go to medical school. She established the first school for nurses in the Haredi sector in cooperation with Hebrew University. And she ran a program for pharmacy studies for Haredim. Are you getting this? Oh, but those Haredim, they still live in the ghetto. They don't know anything that's going on in the modern world. She comes from Givat Zev. She's 41 years old. And I think the purpose of this article is to say that she's not the exception, boys and girls. Dr. Pruchter is becoming the rule. Okay, she's now preparing for her pre-med exams. She has 6 different academic degrees. Oh my gosh, a real lightweight, including a PhD in philosophy of language. She earned the degrees while raising her 8 children, now aged 3 to 21. So what does she say? She says she sees the need for more Haredi male and female physicians who are going to approach the Haredi public out of respect for their worldview and try to find a solution to halachic problems. That's problems that have to mesh with Torah law in their field of medical care. So her husband, another non-lightweight, he's the head of a yeshiva for school for Haredi students. And anybody who thinks, again, well, you know, women are treated like chattel in the Haredi world. Yeah, check this out. He's the head of a yeshiva for students from abroad in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and he is her greatest fan. After she received her doctorate in philosophy, she was crying, and she said, well, what is left for me to study now? And her yeshiva, lifetime bucher husband said to her, now it's time for you to pursue your dream of studying medicine. Okay? Here's doctors starting her program at 41. Her answer is, age is not a consideration. Gender is not a consideration. I'm not planning on retiring. Yes, I'm telling you this story on this show today because for me, it's so exciting. And again, we're on the cusp of great stuff. But if you'll read the article, you will see there are so many beautiful interviews and we are something big is happening here. Okay. God bless you, Dr. Pruchter. We're watching for you and we want to see maybe a few more of ours in the halls of medicine. A sip of coffee. Thank you. Okay. This Shabbos, last chapter in the book of Shemot. And the entire drama, we're sort of like, are we concluding this drama? The birth of the Jewish family. It's all in the narrative portion of this book. The most unimaginable happens in this book. You know, we know about the miracles of the Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. But here in this book, we begin this Goltana exile, this Goltana Galut in Egypt. And what happens? It turns into a nightmare. Great cost. Losses that could not have been until that time imagined. And the miracle? Jews are redeemed. And their great leader, Moshe, he delivers them from bondage. Once again, they're miraculously saved. Manna from heaven, the splitting of the sea, the Torah is given to them. And finally, knowing that if they are not spiritually home, at least they are spiritually on a very clear journey toward some sort of a blessed, glorious destination. They build a mishkan, a tabernacle. And Aharon and his sons, they're the Kohanim. The book of Shemot ends with a spirit, with God's spirit, so to speak, descending into the confines of this tabernacle and challenging Israel to become a holy nation, challenging them to become a kingdom of priests. According to Rabbi Beryl Wine, he sees that the outline of Jewish life throughout the Jewish ages is kind of illustrated here in both the book of Shemot and this particular Torah portion. Just like the stories regarding our foremothers and forefathers that appear in that book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis, that were seen, of course, by our rabbis as being guideposts to all future Jewish history, the events of this book of Shemot, the book of names, are further lesson as to the future of Israel throughout the ages. Goltana Medina, the golden exile, the impatience of the people of Israel, impatient with obstacles, impatient with challenges, easy willingness to pursue golden calves and false ideas. Well, aren't we seeing that today? Immediate weight loss. Too fat? Cut it out. Can't see? LASIK surgery. No hair? Plop on a wig. Bad marriage? Toss it. Grab another. Too many plates to wash? Disposable dishes. The challenge of building a painfully difficult and intricately detailed house of spirituality, house of God-centeredness, it lays before us. Because being a chosen people is to be seen as constantly working at it. There's a constant challenge. It's not resting on our laurels. This fear, this terror from the outside. And sadly, there's a weakness of spirit from within. And so the goal of having God's spirit, so to speak, with us individually. Sorry, I think my hand fell asleep. Individually, within our families and our communities, it's so clear. This book of the Torah becomes the book for all of us in all of our ages, in every country, in every village from where we are listening in all of our difficulties and our triumphs. It's no wonder that the conclusion of the reading of this book, this is the Parsha, this is the Torah portion, where in Shul we stand up and we invoke the blessing and challenge to ourselves. Chazak, chazak, v'nit chazek. Be strong. Be strong. And strengthen others with us. Only in our inner strength and steadfast devotion to the Torah and its ideals will we, yes, today in our time, see with two eyes and multiple souls, the Spirit of God resting within our camp and our hearts. Tell you a quick story. And the story is about an avocado pit. Say what? Isn't this the Devar Torah section? Maybe it was July, maybe it was August. I put 4 toothpicks in an avocado pit. We had had lovely guacamole for Shabbos Kiddush, and I saved the pit. And afterwards, I put the 4 toothpicks in the cup, in the pit, and put it in a cup. And every few days I added water. And I've done this many times before. It's the family joke. Mom and her ever-present avocado pit. And once many years ago, I did grow a plant which subsequently died because of my very not green thumb. And I planted this avocado pit. And my husband watched it. And every day it became the joke. He came in and saying, big things are happening with your avocado pit. And this was July. And it was August. I traveled to South Africa. September came. The Chagim. I put in enough water before I left for America, for Sukkot. I was there. I did not think about my avocado pit after October 7th very much. And I came back and the pit was turning kind of translucent around the edges and nothing happened. It didn't spread. It didn't open. And it became the joke. I have faith. I have emunah shelema for this avocado. This avocado is going to grow into a robust plant and eventually a stunning, beautiful tree, which we will replant somewhere in Eretz Israel. Nothing happened. And January, it became stubbornness. I believe that this pit, something's going to happen. And we had had maybe 100 avocados eaten them since then. But this was the pit where I had put all of my faith. And suddenly, somewhere at the beginning of February, a root, one root, came down. It was an aberrant root. Anybody who has ever rooted avocados knows that hopefully when your pit roots, there are many roots coming down. This had one pit, one root coming out in the cup. It became embarrassing. And that one root, which looked a little like an elephant's snout, I finally said, I'm going to pot it. And I took my pit and I put it in a dirt on the mirpeset, the patio, and left it there. And then became the joke, the pit with the root. And one day, a week ago, a leaf appeared. And not the one stem, the single root, which should have been many, and in my experience, ends with one stem. Instead, the one root took hold, and what grew out? 5 stems of avocado. Not just 5 stems. They are growing at such a rate that we almost can see it. I said, I don't think it's an avocado. I think it's bamboo. And we see it growing. There was something about it, seeing something that we knew was dead, that we knew was improbable, and we knew couldn't happen, wouldn't happen. But what became a joke became really validation of the ever-present life in everything, even if we don't see it. When you look at that tree in your garden or on the street outside your apartment window, that the leaves have fallen away and it looks like you could snap each branch. One morning, it is still naked. And the next morning, you see, barely discernible, wee buds. The trick is not to know. Don't know so much. Hold the faith and give it up to God. I want to finish with just a quick comment on this parsha that I believe we can all take to our Shabbos tables. In the beginning of this week's Torah reading, well, we have a record of Moshe reminding the children of Israel, B'nai Israel, to keep the Shabbat. Isn't that front and center? This is following his calling for donations to be used for the construction of this Mishkan, the tabernacle. We know that in all of the parshas, there's a set order to them. There's no mistakes. It's not a history book. It's a lesson book. It's a blueprint for life. So the placement of these two these two adjacent Torah portions last week and this week, well, they've been discussed a lot of times. Rashi, and he's one of the most well-known commentators. If you don't know Rashi, look him up. He explains the placement of Shabbat before the Mishkan. I'm going to use the word Mishkan, okay? Stay with me. It's a tabernacle. Teaches us that the construction of the latter is not as important as keeping Shabbat. And therefore, B'nai Yisrael has to stop its building of the Mishkan once the Shabbat arrives. Now, this is derived in order, the order in which the Torah records them, placing Shabbat ahead of God's dwelling place on earth, the Mishkan. I'm getting off script a second, just to tell us that it's not just Torah words. We're supposed to be taking everything to heart. And I'm asking all of us to think for a moment of the importance of our beautiful house of worship as juxtaposed to how we celebrate the Sabbath. What really reigns supreme in our consciousness? So the Kli Yakar offers another explanation. But to understand this alternative answer, okay, we have to first look back at last week's Parsha. We see the Shabbat and the Mishkan mentioned next to each other, just like this Shabbos. There, God tells Moshe about the details of the construction of the Mishkan. But it's not until several paragraphs later that he reminds Moshe about the sanctity of the Shabbat. The chapter reads, and I translate, "However, you must observe my Sabbaths." Well, notwithstanding the importance and the holy status of the Mishkan, Shabbat is holier. And here, B'nai Yisrael has to stop working. It's not one more minute. It's not, I know Shabbos came in, but I need to get the sukkah ready. This is learned directly from the Hebrew word, ach, without which one might think otherwise. It means, however, there's a ganza, however. After seeing this, we might, I don't know about you, but I, you know, there's several questions. How can we explain this change in the order of the mitzvot of Shabbat and Mishkan, or Mishkan Shabbat? It would seem that in the order in our Parsha, it's more understandable because Shabbos comes first and consequently removes the need for the word however, which is found in last week's. So one answer is in the reason behind the two mitzvot. Okay, one second here to see what's going on. The two mitzvot. The keeping of the Shabbat is to show all of humankind that God created the world. And if he told us to stop working, then we must listen to him. B'nai Yisrael, keeping the Shabbat could be viewed as a way of honoring him in this world. But the Mishkan is for the honor of B'nai Yisrael, indeed the people. Its purpose was to show the world that God reveres them by dwelling in their midst. In addition, by enumerating the laws of the Mishkan, he's placing this incredible order, this incredible kavod, this incredible honor on us. So the answer explains why the construction of the Mishkan is pushed off by keeping the Shabbat. Because if we're talking about an honor greater over that of a lesser, the honor of the greater comes first. So aside from Jewish law, what's the lesson we're supposed to learn here? It's how we treat our fellow members of Klal Yisrael. If God, despite his awesomeness, places glory of B'nai Yisrael before his own, can't we honor our friends before ourselves? Shabbat Shalom. Umivorach from Jerusalem.